So we are beginning a very auspicious retreat to not only welcome in the new year and the new kalpa, but to welcome in your real supreme self into full, total presence in the here and now. The title, the official title of the retreat is Attaining Mahasukha, but as usual, it's an incorrect title. Do we have a pen? The reason it's incorrect is that it comes from a dualistic paradigm, which is exactly what we are here to cure ourselves of, the belief in duality. So Mahasukha is already here. It doesn't have to be attained. It is within you. You are actually transmitting it, whether you know it or not. It's inherent to the spectrum of consciousness that you both attune to naturally because you come from there and you transmit it. And so we are always transceivers of Mahasukha, but unless we attune to that station, we ourselves will not appreciate the fullness and the power of that divine delight. And so the retreat is only to learn how to tune your instrument so that it's no longer off-key, out of tune, but perfectly tuned to the real. And then you will be naturally, without any effort, in the state of Mahasukha, which is often translated as the great bliss or the infinite bliss. But, you know, most people in this postmodern period don't relate very well to bliss. It's not in most people's repertoire. So I looked up in my thesaurus for a few alternatives that actually may give more access to the feeling aspect of the state. What if it was great joy, great happiness, great ecstasy, beatitude, euphoria, exhilaration, elation, rapture, exaltation? And then the thesaurus added one that you would think belongs in a slightly different category, but blessedness. Because if you are truly blessed, you will be in that state of great joy. And likewise, we could say grace is an alternative translation. Even glory has become such a degraded term when it is used, but it really is a state of glory. Can you imagine being in a state of glory? For no reason at all. That's our natural state. Now, well, jubilation is another one that's often used in different states of drunkenness than that of great bliss. But then I think we should also add such other alternative meanings as serenity. Because if you're really in a state of serenity, that's blissful, compared to the stress and anxiety that one is usually in the ego state. If you suddenly come into serenity and can abide in that state, you will call it bliss. And it will be a state that you'll want to stay in. Similarly, with contentment, if you are really in a state of total contentment, that's very blissful. So I'm sure you'll be able to add more such words. I even think stillness is a good translation. And total presence. Because total presence will bring you into that state that is glorious. These words tend to have disappeared from our ordinary use of English language. I don't know if that's true in other languages as well. But English, in the real sense, is almost an extinct language nowadays. People prefer to speak emojian, you know, and LOLian and WTFian and worse things than that. But it's not English. So, you know, we have to really learn again how to articulate these very subtle states of our inner being and be able to communicate about them in order to help others realize that they can attune to them. But most important is for oneself to be so attuned. So, the real definition of Mahasukha that I would like to begin with, however, is that it is the state that signifies the fulfillment of life. How many of you would like to live a fulfilled life? Okay? So imagine, what does it feel like when you have attained whatever it was that you put in your bucket list as necessary to be in that state of fulfillment? And imagine you're in that state now without needing to go through all the intermediary detail work. Because you don't. Because the fulfillment of life is this state, regardless of what you do to get there, since you don't have to do anything to get there. Well, you do have to do one thing. You have to let go of everything you're holding on to that isn't joyous, blissful, glorious, and real. That's all. And then you will realize that you are living a fulfilling life. And it's natural and simple. There couldn't be anything more simple than that. And I will say that it's an act of service. In a time of such intense global conflict, wars, genocides, worst kind of savagery degradation in the world, if we can put a nice dose of Mahasukha into the morphogenic field of the planet, we will certainly be doing a very fine act of service. So why not contribute to lifting the vibrational frequency for everyone just by being fulfilled? What could be easier than that? Interesting. The other definitions prerequisites, even perhaps, for Mahasukha that one sees in its original context, because the word itself is a term that was developed and considered a very central concept in Tantric Buddhism. Actually, in Tantra per se, also in the Shaivite Tantric wisdom schools, going back to the Pashupatas, Mahasukha. But the Tantric Buddhists developed it in much more elaborate ways in their texts, the Tibetans in particular. And they still use the Sanskrit terms, and they said to be in Mahasukha requires the combination of karuna and pragya. Karuna is often translated as compassion, but actually it means caring. In fact, the word care comes from karuna. We speak Sanskrit without knowing it, but nearly all of our words come from there. So it's caring for the whole. Why? Because the whole is yourself. There is no other. So to care for yourself means you care for the whole. And to care for the whole is to bring joy into the world, so that all benefit from that vibrational frequency becoming more powerful and coherent and attunable to by whoever wishes. Mahasukha does not require following a formula of rules. In fact, it's freedom from rules, including the yamas and niyamas. One will be virtuous in that state as a byproduct, but without an intention. Now, I was thinking of the word yama, having just seen yama outside before coming, and so it reminded me that yama means death. You know, in the Upanishads, yama is the lord of death. Why is it that we would be vowing to follow a number of yamas? Literally, they are little deaths. Each yama is a constraint or a self-enforced death to a certain urge of the ego to act out in a certain way, right? So if you take the yama of nonviolence, that part of you that would be violent, that has any anger, hatred, fury, or whatever, it has to die to follow it. So all of the yamas, if you actually follow them, they will bring about death of the ego. But they do it through restraint and self-oppression rather than through the act of freedom from the ego. And if we realize that we are not the ego, then all of those yamas and niyamas are unnecessary. They are only for those who are in a state of the opposite of mahasukha, mahadukha, which is what most egos are in these days. So to shift from mahadukha to mahasukha, you can't follow rules because rules will just make you even more angry that you don't have the freedom to do what you want to do. So use your freedom to be. Another interesting thing about death, there's no such thing as generalized death. Death is always someone's death. And for most people, the only death that concerns them is my death, right? For each one, my death. If you even think about it, most people refuse to because it's not palatable for most egos. But since death can only appear to you as my death in each person's narrative of first person, if you are in a state of consciousness where there is no longer any me or my, then there cannot be any longer any death. Because death only pertains to a me. So the self in Mahasukha is deathless because it's egoless. And that's the meaning of freedom. Freedom from the dukkha, the unhappiness, the incompleteness, the inadequacy, the futility, the failure of the ego consciousness to achieve fulfillment. All of that is overcome by overcoming death, and death is simply the ego itself. The ego is nothing other than the death drive, the lower death drive, in all of its permutations and elaborations. So if we are in a state of caring for the whole of God's creation, and we're in a state of non-duality, then we realize that that creation is our own, not that of another, and that every being in the cosmos, every being who appears in your consciousness, is a manifestation of yourself. Because you no longer have an ego that is particular and separate, then all beings are manifestations of one intelligence. And the only way to relate authentically is in a state of karuna and pragya, wisdom, and that caring that is the essence of love. But not love for the ego of the other, because if you are attached to another's ego, then you are cursing them with death. You're identifying with them with death, not with eternal life. So we must relate to each other, not from an egoic place, but from that place of freedom that recognizes all as the one I. Because there aren't a multiplicity. There's only one that manifests as the many, but always remains the one. Once you recognize that the world is not other than your own consciousness, that's all it is. And everything that appears in your world appears in your consciousness because you needed that experience to balance something that was not whole. You needed to have information that was being censored or denied, or you were in a state of lack of karuna for a certain type of being that you projected negatively on, or you were in some state that required the appearance of a phenomenon, an event, a situation, a karmic interaction, something that would awaken you to the need to integrate a new learning into your being so that an increased level of self-transformation toward that total fulfillment would take place. And that's the only real reason for maha dukkha, or even mini dukkha. It's only there to awaken you to some internal suffering that is being projected and returning as karma in the world. And if we recognize that everything that appears is your own consciousness, there is no one else, period, but no one else to blame, no other causes. Because in non-duality, there are neither causes nor effects. That's duality, if there's cause and effect. No, what happens is the immediate reflection of the state of the self. In the same way, because non-duality is the truth, which you realize when the mind is quiet and present, there is no duality between means and end. And because there's no duality between means and end, there is no means by which you can get to Mahasukha if you're not already there. There's no means. And everyone wants to find a means. What's the way? What mantra? What asanas? What pranayamas? What formula? What techniques? It's letting go of that belief that there's any difference or separation. Only that. And so it's so easy and so simple and so immediate that the ego feels it's impossible. But there's a secret reason, a core reason, why the ego considers it impossible to be in great bliss. Mahasukha is a state of total vulnerability. And the ego doesn't want to be vulnerable. It doesn't want to be hurt again. And so it has created ego defenses so that it wards off the threat of love and it keeps its heart closed so it won't be hurt again, because it was already hurt by toxic love in the past. And it will not allow itself to return to its own innocence because it's afraid it will be exploited, taken advantage of, and mistreated if it doesn't hold on to its anger and its avoidance and its fight-or-flight modes and all of the other defenses and delusions that are used to keep from being completely vulnerable, including pretending one is vulnerable, pretending one is already in one soul when one is still in the ego. Pretense is a very common approach, but of course you can fool others, but not yourself. It doesn't bring through Mahasukha. So the ego resists what would heal you, what would heal your heart, out of fear of being hurt again. But that's an illusion. And it's only when we take the risk of opening to love, both within and without, since they are the same, and to freedom from all defenses that include judgments of the other and negative projections and all of the other ways in which we keep a kind of paranoid alarm system going out there that actually creates its own reason for being alarmed and unwilling to open. And that's what will have to be faced if you really want Mahasukha to be attuned to. So I'm going to ask you to agree to accept 7 rules for this retreat. Okay? And I hope you'll be able to freely agree to them, even though I said that it isn't about following rules. But for this retreat, if you allow yourself to accept these parameters, you will be in Mahasukha before the retreat is over. Swati, will you write them on the board? I'll just say them very briefly. So, for the duration of this retreat, and that goes for anyone online as well, you'll have to be on the honor system, but type in your agreement to these if you are willing. For the duration of retreat, 1, you're not allowed to think or entertain a negative thought. All right? You can't think it, and if someone else says something like it, you don't entertain it, you don't allow it to be in your consciousness. And a negative thought, you'll have to define it, but it'll be anything that brings you down from joy and from love and from that state of wisdom and karuna that is your true nature. So the second is, do not engage in any ego-based conversations. Okay? Do not relate to each other as egos during this retreat. And don't talk about egoic matters. You can speak about the teachings and about how beautiful and glorious it is to be in Mahasukha, but no egoic conversations. Okay? The third, keep your mind, your attention in constant presence. Do not fall into reverie states or with memory images of the past or worry about the future. For the duration of the retreat, you stay fully present, here and now. 4, have no projections or judgments about anyone or anything. And the reason I make that different from the one of negative thoughts is that this often happens without thinking it. It's a preconception. You find yourself with an attitude towards someone in which you assume the worst, or that there is some dislike or distrust or whatever. But when you catch yourself having such preconceived or predispositions of an attitude that creates even a trace of an internal conflict with the other, or a sense of separation, or a schism that blocks love, then you have to release it. Okay? Five, you must keep your body as relaxed as possible. If you find yourself tightening up and you find any kind of contractions in the muscles, those are based on thoughts that might be subconscious and somatized. But whatever stress is in the body starts in the mind. And so by relaxing the body, you bring those back into the mind in order for you to see what's there and then let go of it. Okay? So let this be a very relaxing 5 days. Okay? And be aware when there's even a slight bit of tension. Okay? And that relaxation involves, this is the same one, it involves not fidgeting in meditation. You see a lot of people with nervous movements in meditation. They can't sit still and in serenity. That's a sign that you're not relaxed. And there's anxiety in the body or some kind of stress. Nervousness. Notice what it is and release it so that you can be in equanimity during meditation. Okay? So, six, an obvious one, please stay off your phone and off the internet to the maximum amount possible. Have no diversions. And seven, please come to every class and stay awake in every meditation. I find more people sleep at 11 a.m. than at 5 a.m., but there are people sleeping in both. If you find yourself sleepy, and you know in advance that that's a tendency, take an herb. Take Gotu Kola. Y-R has some, yeah? Gotu Kola is good. If that doesn't work for you, take Guarana or ginseng or whatever works. But stay awake. Because if you're not awake, you won't be able to attune to Mahasukha, and you're wasting a precious opportunity. Make sure you value the meditations and the teachings sufficiently that you want to internalize them and turn them into your reality that remains constant. And so if we do not practice relentlessly with that intention, it won't happen. Not because it's a means to that end, but because, as the Zen master Dogen said, we don't practice to become enlightened, we practice being enlightened. Mm-hmm. And so in your meditations, be in the state of Mahasukha, which is your natural state, not trying to get there, but eliminating sanskaras, habit patterns of not being in your true nature. How many agree to all seven of those agreements? Yeah? Okay, wonderful. If you do, you'll see Mahasukha is going to be your total natural state, and you will never come down from that glory. Well, let's see. I think that's probably all I should go into tonight. Because I should leave some time to answer questions and clarify anything that has already been spoken about. And I think we have a good enough introduction to understand what Mahasukha means intellectually and symbolically. And now we have to feel it and settle into that state, which is a state of non-conceptualizing mind. In other words, you are not here to think about Mahasukha, or think about why you're not in it, or to be concerned that you won't have enough time to get there, or any other kind of narcissistic, self-attacking mental chatter. So remember, you agreed no negative thoughts. That means you can't attack yourself or worry about not getting there, because you're already there, and the state you want to be in is the state in which there is no chatter, no narrative. Because once you're in Mahasukha, there's nothing to think about. You've arrived at that level of your being that thought cannot reach. Because thought is always about the state of becoming. Thought is always about change. And Mahasukha is the realization of the changeless nature, the eternal nature of the self. So, it's simply being present without any thoughts that are taking you away from who you are, and without any stress taking you away, and without any conflict of will in your subconscious or in any part of the ego complex that creates resistance to vulnerability. Okay? That's it. So, without further ado, the floor is open. If anyone has any questions or comments about anything that has been spoken of so far. And we have a microphone. Please go to the mic if you're able to. Purusha.
Thank you, Shunya, for the teaching, and welcome to everyone who's joining us online. We have people tuning in from Canada, India, the US, Spain, Sweden, Bulgaria, Ireland, Switzerland, the Netherlands, Ethiopia, England, Costa Rica, and Australia. We're happy to have you with us.
Welcome.
The first question comes from Kevin. It's a two-parter. If one can do this almost automatically with the help of cannabis, is that cheating?
I wouldn't say it's cheating, but the problem is, can you do it without that? You don't want to be dependent. You want to realize this is your natural state. So if it's useful, okay, but there comes a time when it becomes a habit that creates a dependency that produces a fear that you can't do without it. And the moment you realize you don't need anything to enhance your ability to be present without thought, then you will reach a level of freedom that will enable you to let go of everything without attachment. And you don't want to have attachment to that herb as if you need that, you know, on your deathbed when you're about to go to the light to say, oh, I got to have a toke before, you know. No, you won't have time for that, and don't depend on it. Don't depend on anything other than your being, your essence. But I will say, cannabis is an herb that was always sacred to Shiva in India and still is. And for yogis who use it properly and don't abuse it, and who use it only to reach deep meditation, to be in silence, and only so long as that is necessary as a kind of training wheels for the consciousness, then it can be used. But if it's not used in that proper context by someone who has the yogic development to make use of it properly, it will actually produce paranoia, and it can produce very negative states and worse anxiety, because the unprocessed subconscious can come up, and also the conscience and the superconscious mind can bring about a recognition of a kind of disharmony that has been avoided, that can come up as some very deep anguish. So I don't recommend that it just be used in general, and that it is something that is dealt with only in a very sacred manner, and only when one is qualified for that shamanic usage. Go ahead.
And the second part of the question was, if I entertain a negative thought and I catch myself, what should I do and how do I release it?
Just stop thinking it, that's all. And go back into the silent presence. Don't beat yourself up. Don't try to undo it with other thoughts and say, oh, I didn't mean that, please forgive me. You know, don't go into any kind of a narrative. Just back to silence. And be very attentive that kind of a thought doesn't arise again. Okay? Any others?
Yes, a question from one of our pragyanis, Alan. As we were listening, I could feel and see this unification of soul. In past studies, one protected oneself from beings that one viewed as negative. But is the only danger really a backlash from the ego?
If you're doing this naturally without the use of any substances, then yes, I think that's the only danger. And I would say it's more than just a danger. I think you can count on it, that there will be a backlash, that the ego will try to grab you and either convince you that it's unreal, it's a fantasy, it's not worth the effort, or it's impossible for you, you're too much of a sinner, you're too much of a whatever, you've been defiled and hurt too much to be able to be innocent again and vulnerable. It'll try to create obstacles for you, but none of them are real, and if you see through the delusions, then nothing will stop you from attaining freedom. There was one quote I forgot to read you. I meant to read this in the beginning. It's kind of the epigraph for the whole retreat. It's a short quote from Sri Ramana, our patron sage here at Sat Yoga, from Talks. And in case anyone is interested, this is from the 29th of November, 1935. And someone asks Ramana, how to get bliss? And Ramana answers, bliss is not something to be got. On the other hand, the truth is you are always bliss. This desire is born of the sense of incompleteness. To whom is this sense of incompleteness? Inquire. In deep sleep, you were blissful. Now you are not so. What is interposed between that bliss and this non-bliss? Just the ego. Seek its source, and you find you are bliss. There's nothing new to get, but you have to get rid of your ignorance, which makes you think that you are other than bliss. But for whom is this ignorance? Just to the ego. So trace the source of the ego, and then the ego is lost and bliss remains over. It is eternal. You are that, here and now. And that is the master key for solving all doubts. The doubts arise in the mind. The mind is born of the ego. The ego rises from the self. Search the source of the ego, and the self is revealed. That alone remains. The universe is only your expanded self. It is not different from the self. And the self is bliss. So, very brief to the point description of Mahasukha by one who is definitely in that state. So, if there are any other questions from anyone here before we adjourn, we still have a few minutes. I can always depend on Karuna, that's great.
Well, thank you once again. This has been a very valuable teaching. Especially when you mentioned just this point of the resistance to vulnerability and being completely vulnerable. Mm. It's exactly this that I've been struggling with just in pretty much all recent meditations. It comes to that point where it becomes really uncomfortable to continue meditating and to keep feeling deeper inside. And then there are sensations of more joy or bliss coming through, but almost as soon as that happens, there's also the ego that blocks it over and resists against it. Mm-hmm. And so there's a back and forth happening there. And I guess my question is, because I very much notice that it is the paranoia of the ego. Mm-hmm. There's a defensive wall that's put there.
That's right.
And it makes the whole process of meditating, of going deeper inside, feel very risky and out of the comfort zone. And I guess my question is, what is the right approach to this? Is it just to keep accepting that and to keep facing this feeling that's very uncomfortable and that it clears up at some point automatically? Yes. Or is there something else that...
Okay, this is a very important and core question for everyone because every ego complex has this issue in one permutation or another because the ego is made of a conflict of drives, the lower death drive and the upper death drive. The upper death drive, if you take it, which is the drive to Mahasukha, because there is an inherent urge to be in that state. You want to be happy. Everyone wants to be happy, but not at the cost of ego death. Right? I'll hold on to my pain and suffering, thank you. I want my identity and my belief system and all of the particularities of my suffering. I treasure it, it's my jouissance. I'm not going to give that up to be no one, right? Because that's how the ego imagines it. Not that it's God that you are, but no one. I won't exist. I'll, I'll lose all significance and I'll lose all connection to that which I value and am attached to in this level, and mm-hmm. I will suddenly not know who I am and be in a strange new world of consciousness with ideas and feelings that I have no idea about, and I'll have to be open to the unknown, uh-huh. right? To the infinite. So that's why this is called the hero's journey. You have to be a divine warrior and destroy the fear, slay the demon of fear, the fear of growth, the fear of letting go, the fear of the infinite. And once you have eliminated that, then you take off into Mahasukha instantly. And what results from that is the infinite creative intelligence that comes through, that produces beauty, works of art, creative ideas, and capacities to help, to heal, to uplift others, to bring joy into the world, and to make your life into the highest work of art. And it brings fulfillment, which you will not get by holding on to the ego. So you have to be conscious of all that and make the determined decision to not buy into the fear and to let go and not hold on.
Thank you. Yeah, I notice all of these things that you're saying, that there's when the bliss comes through, there's a sense of, okay, it's obvious that this is what I want. And then how is there something that's fighting against? But it's the mm-hmm. lower death drive. Mm-hmm. And yeah, also at the same time, this wanting of, I guess the ego would just want a very purified and free and liberated ego, but still an ego that it could...
Remember, the ego is not a unity. Mm-hmm. It's a multiplicity. It's made up of a number of different conflicting fragments, beginning with the child ego, very infantile self that's in a very primitive state of still wanting mommy, and the superego mommy, and a superego daddy that you may hate. And right, the Oedipus mm-hmm. thing actually has some validity in the ego complex. And all of the other superego voices that say, don't do as I say, do as I do, and violate the rules and break free of these yamas and niyamas, and break free of the need to feel like you have to grow and become responsible and be an adult. Why not mm-hmm. be one of those lost kids with Peter Pan and never grow up, right? That puer eternus complex that Jung named, that never wants to give up its infantile attachments and never discover its own infinite nature. It's that has to be overcome. But there are many of these different conflicting intentions, and until you have unified them all, you won't get out of the ego. And so you will have to come into the ego as the soul, as the center of awareness, the real I that takes all of these I thoughts and brings them into harmony as a single drive to reach your ultimate fulfillment and happiness that all of these want, but they want it in the wrong way so that they'll never get it. Mm-hmm. And when you have the wisdom, the pragya to know that, and the karuna for all of those fragments, then you will rise.
Thank you.
Thank you. We still... Amrita.
Thank you. Namaste. Thank you for this class. I feel very resonant with what you're teaching and guiding us, and the word attuning mm-hmm. Feels very motivating in a way. And I was wondering if you can give us some, give me some guidance on if I don't feel the attunement while in meditation, how are some avenues or paths to
okay.
open it up?
You have to start with the assumption that your real self is in a state of joy, of happiness. Your real self, not your ego. Ego never will be. And the ego will not be motivated, for all the reasons we just talked about, to want to get out. But when you realize you are not that ego, because the ego is always paranoid and fearful of this and that and feeling inadequate and, right, can't do it, it has all of these beliefs. By letting go of those beliefs and feeling what it's like to be free of any negative baggage that the mind is holding on to, that freedom is already sukha, right? And then when you realize that's who you are and you don't need to go back into that negative complex, then you're in mahasukha, right? And you will attune to it just by silencing the mind. You don't need to do anything else because it's already there. Just be in a state of presence, and that presence is mahasukha. Nothing needs to be added or done, but you have to be in silence that doesn't have a trace of those ego vibrations, right? So it is deactivated, and then that's what remains. As Ramana said, that's what is left over when the ego is lost, is just that bliss, right? Mm.
Thank you.
Okay, a question from Nathaniel, who said, what should I do if I'm feeling suicidal?
Well, first of all, you have to ask yourself why that is. And if, in fact, what you want to really commit is egocide, not suicide, what's the point of killing your body? Your body is innocent. It didn't cause the problem. The problem was caused only by your mind. And your mind has obviously created some very painful situation and something you want to run away from, which is cowardice. So rather than running away from yourself, run toward yourself. Commit egocide. Kill the ego and all of its thought patterns and its affects and its desire to run away and commit suicide, because your wisdom knows you won't be able to run away. Karma catches up to you. The long arm of karmic law will catch you in the next life. And in between lives, you will end up going to a bardo state in which you will wish you hadn't had to meet up with those wrathful deities. So it's not the solution. And once you recognize that the only solution is surrender to God and becoming one with God, which is mahasukha, it's grace, it's bliss in itself, then that's what you will do without delay. Because the urgency, if there are suicidal thoughts already, the urgency of going through ego death is extreme, all right? The red lights are flashing for you. And the only way out is liberation from the ego before it takes you down and brings you into hell realms that I wouldn't wish on anyone. And so if you have to learn from that, so be it. But there are nicer ways of getting out of the matrix. And the best way is through the joy of the realization that you are already one with God.
A question from Timur. How can one truly relax the body? Could dancing or qigong pre-meditation be useful to let go?
It can be. If you need to do those things, yes, asanas, pranayamas, dance, singing, sacred singing in particular, anything that puts you into a devotional state, into a state of love and joy, this tends to cause the prana to flow through the body. That's our life force. And the more that life energy flows, the more the body expands and is filled with such well-being that it's able to relax. Does someone have a question, but you're too shy to ask it? Is there anyone in that state right now? Or you think it's too stupid a question or too elementary? Is there anyone in that state? Is there anyone who just feels shy? No shyness. No inhibition, that's wonderful. And no questions, must be in Mahasukha already. How many of you felt that the teaching tonight made sense? Yeah? Okay. If it makes sense to you, you know you are already in Mahasukha. There's nothing to attain. It's what you are. It's simply letting go of any beliefs otherwise. And that can be done instantly. No process. No waiting. You know, no delay is necessary. You don't need to defer your realization of the true nature of your being, but let it be fully embodied. Let your spirit and your body be in non-duality.
Okay, a question from Lisa. How do we navigate relationships from this place of being? I feel like I'm quite telepathic these days and require a lot of discernment.
Well, it makes relationships easy and beautiful because you see everyone as the self. There is no other. And everyone can be treated with care and love and freedom without attachment, without intention or agenda. And if someone doesn't want to relate to you on that level, you can let them go. There's no need to be in any kind of conflict. And so it's very simple. And everything in life will become very simple and very clear when you're in this state, because there'll be no internal needs for the affirmation of another, to be validated, to be reassured, to have any kind of dependency on any other. And that's what makes relationships difficult. And when there's independence and self-sovereignty and an overflowing capacity to give without needing anything in return, and to see that which is highest, purest, most beautiful and real in the other. And you have, as you say, the telepathic discernment to perceive the ego obstructions that the other is perhaps trying to work through, but is causing them not to see themselves in the same way. You may be able to provide healing medicine with words that can help to unlock their heart and their ability to free themselves from their own anguish.
I have a question related to something you just talked about. It's the sensing in the body. And there's I'm trying to figure the relationship of the sensing in the body and the sensing out of conception. It's kind of like is there a delusion of sensing in the body, and how do I know that what I'm sensing in my body is actually Mahasukha, there's a split between sensing in the body, and then it's not sensing in the body anymore. It's just a sense of being, but there's a link somewhere that I'm kind of missing.
Well, Mahasukha in the first place has nothing to do with the body. In fact, it's the realization that there is really no such thing as a body. All there is consciousness. Consciousness can congeal itself into forms that will appear as if they are material and are bodies, but they're not really, and even physics knows they're all mainly 99.999% space, right? But even space is only consciousness. And so that's all that is there. But Your function is to recognize the source of your consciousness itself. Nothing in the body, just consciousness. And then once you are attuned to that vibrational frequency, it will spread through the body. It will become what you will then sense in the body, but it will still be an expansion of that which comes from that core zero point of presence. And then you'll feel it not just in the body. It'll be in everything, in everyone. That it'll be what's called samarasa. The same taste of bliss will be in every experience. And a joy and a delight in every event, in every meeting, every encounter, every meal, everything that happens will bring that delight fully renewed into the consciousness. But it all comes from that place that is always emanating that vibration.
Yeah, okay, thank you very much. Mm-hmm.
So it's important not to make a duality between the self and the body. The body will reflect and be filled with that vibrational frequency that heals the body, in fact, because that divine love and joy is the best healing medicine that there is, and it will release stress and whatever else has been stored in the body. All right, so I think we will adjourn for this evening and convene and commence in the morning and go deeper into this subject and into the most subtle obstructions and resistances, so they can be depotentiated quickly, and to practice the realization that we are already enlightened and we are already filled with Sat-Chit Ananda and Mahasukha, the great bliss, is what we are. May you give yourself the blessing of that knowledge.